Welcome to MOOCcast number one, being streamed live on July 6th-ish. Yes, July 6th, most places on the planet. Probably July 7th where you are, John?
That's right, yep.
And we are joined by John Graves in New Zealand and Vance Stevens in Abu Dhabi. And MOOCcast, what's a MOOCcast? It's for EdgeMOOC 2011. I thought, why not go online and try to have a live conversation about whatever people are edumooking about. So people are welcome to Skype in and share resources or thoughts or feedback on the edumook. It's open-ended, no structure. You can Skype World Bridges to join in. There's a text chat room where people can chime in with questions and comments as well. I, by way of introduction, am in Pusan, Korea. I teach in a teacher training program here at Pusan University of Foreign Studies. I've been involved with EdTech Talk, and as such have been involved, or at least aware of MOOCs since the CCK era. And with Vance, I think he's sort of a revered ancestor of MOOCing with a lot of what he's done with webheads and EVO and whatnot. So that's who I am. John, why don't we hear who you are again, if you don't mind.
Not a problem. I'm a PhD student down here at the AUT University in Auckland, New Zealand, working on the Wiki to Speech project that should combine the collaborative capabilities of Wikipedia with the new voices that are available on the computer in that text-to-speech capability. So trying to capture some of the content from today's discussion and the Thursday sessions and summarize that in Wiki-to-Speech format so everybody can have a go at listening to these computer robotic presentations, if you will.
So you type up a review, post it, and it gets spoken from the text.
That's correct. I'm already on about slide 5 or 6 of today's discussion, just leading into tonight's conversation, and just taking screen snapshots and adding a few words that the computer will later generate a voiceover.
Wow, if I knew you were taking screenshots, I would have, you know, made sure I looked. Yeah. Before we get to the answer, I just wanted to ask, who's behind this project? Is this a personal project of yours? Is this a university project, or is it a commercial backer?
It is, in fact, a PhD research project. Studying open source software development, we needed to have a target open source software project, and so this educational software, Wiki to Speech, is what we're actually investigating, how the collaborative process actually evolves.
So. And so this is open source?
Absolutely. The application and all of its source code are available in executable forms for Windows, Mac, and Android.
And I want to say hello to Rob Darrow, who's just joined us. And I don't hear any audio from you yet, Rob, so we're waiting
for
that. Oh, Rob's there.
Yep.
Great. Hey, congrats, being the first person to Skype in cold. Nicely done. And I want to get to you in a moment, Rob, but Vance, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what MOOC involvement you have, if any?
Well, okay. My name is Vance Stevens, and I'm kind of well-known for being involved with Webheads in Action, and so is Jeff, for that matter. I think our history goes back some ways. I'm always amused when I read about it, because Jeff was started his Skype casting or his webcasting, he was kind of setting up, and I think this is an anecdote that Dave Cormier keeps repeating. He was playing One is the Loneliest Number for some time, yeah? And because, you know, nobody was Skyping in. Then one of the webheads, Buthena, Skyped in, and that's how the rest is history. You know, we sort of made that connection early on. Webheads is just a community of educators. It's been going on since 1998. I'm not sure when Jeff got started, but it could have been...
I think it was June 5th, 2005.
Oh, that's the present project that you were in Tibet.
Oh, when I got involved with Webheads, I had never heard of Webheads before that. I don't know how I hadn't.
Yeah, well, I suppose we really got started as a teaching group, as a group of teachers, or community of practice of teachers in 2002. So 2005 wasn't that far down the pipe. And we hadn't heard of you either, so I guess we were late as well. But anyway, now we know each other quite well. And as far as MOOCs are concerned, I've been teaching a multiliteracies course for some years now. It goes once or twice a year. I teach it either for the Electronic Village Online or TESOL Principles and Practices of Online Teaching program. And as I've kind of developed it, I've really gotten into two things, and one is MOOCs and the other is e-portfolios, and there are so many concatenations. I mean, because they're personal learning environments, both of them. And I've started calling MOOCs, as far as I use them, minuscule open online courses, because I think it scales down. You know, it scales to, you can use it for 5 or 50 or 500 or 5,000 people. I mean, basically the principle is that people do what they want to do and learn from one another and connect, you know. And Dave Cormier, of course, has it pretty well laid out in some very simple Common Craft type videos where you do four things, basically. You orient yourself, you declare, and I'm trying to remember what the other two are. Focus is the last one, and network, I suppose, must be in there somewhere. So a cluster. I remember you orient on the program. You declare yourself, your interests. For example, John has just declared his interest in text-to-speech Wikipedia project. And so, well, okay, Jeff had a lot of interesting questions about that. So, you know, now they're starting to cluster if we get more people interested in that kind of thing. So, you know, it's a really nice concept, I think, and one that I'm trying to apply in the courses that I'm able to create.
And one that I think, you know, I think Electronic Village Online, which is something that the Webheads are involved with, is kind of, you know, very similar. It's a little bit structured in a different way. It's an open set of a dozen or so workshops that happen every year for 6 weeks. And it's got a lot of MOOC-like characteristics.
Well, my course is one of those, and I overtly try to run it on MOOC precepts. And I'm also, interestingly, in the minuscule version as opposed to the massive version, I get the same complaints. That in the massive version, you get a lot of voices of people saying, whoa, what is this? I'm so confused. Where's the center, you know? And I was reading in Stephen Downs, his posting from yesterday, there was something on how the way people learn and the way kids learn in particular, and if you guide them too much, then they don't figure it out themselves, and that's exactly what we're trying to do with, that's what the MOOC philosophy is. There's no real guidance. You guide yourself. You have to decide what it is you want to do and how to learn it, and then find people in the MOOC that help you to learn it. And if you're a motivated learner, and you can articulate the literacies that you need to do that, then you can succeed. If you're not, of course, it's not for you.
I want to get Rob in here, but I want to quickly address, I want to cluster with Clark, who asked, what's going on here? You guys are in a Skype call, but I'm seeing it on Ustream. I use a program called ManyCam, which you should be seeing on the Ustream momentarily. It is free, and it lets you capture your screen or your camera or a bunch of other stuff, and then in your Ustream window, which is here, you can choose the ManyCam as your video source. I think I'm going to lower my audio levels a little there. And that's how it works. I should mention I have two monitors, which makes this a lot easier, and a video card that sometimes starts to sweat. And if you hear excessive fan noise, that's because my video card is saying, "Oi, I'm a little tired." Rob, what brings you to this MOOC?
So, good morning. It's I woke up around 6 a.m. here in California and went to EduMOOC and saw that you were on today, so I thought, okay, I'll try this out. I'm a former principal of an online charter school, and just retired from my school district, and my passion is online learning. And so I'm starting a company where I hopefully will help school districts and colleges move online learning forward. So, and Jeff, I've listened to you and Dave and group on EdTech Talk for many years.
It's amazing how many years it's been. What kind of reception are you getting so far, to any extent that you have? Are schools excited about this possibility, or still as cautious as they were years ago?
Well, they're cautious now. In California, it's a very bad budget year, so they're not going to be moving anything forward. But what I know, and I just finished my doctorate in online learning and educational leadership, so I've got all this research that shows that we're moving towards online learning, whether people want to or not. So school districts are going to need guidance in doing that. So that's where I figure I can play that role, because currently the only voice out there are the voices of vendors. And I figure I can be an independent voice connecting school districts with online learning programs to provide online courses for all students.
Speaking of voices out there, I'm going to bring...
Nice segue.
The Duke of MOOCs, Dave Cormier, into this conversation. I mean, we knew Dave when he was just a humble EdTech talker, and now he's like the standard of reference for MOOCing. Hey, Dave. Have you done the Skype thing before?
I'm not getting any audio. I wonder why that is.
We hear you.
It's probably experimenting with another intro. They're all so cool, and they're all different. This is the delayed entry.
And John did want to ask Dave how he did the video. He did that very who did the Twitter in plain English and all that stuff?
Common Craft.
Yes, Sir Mookie Mook, welcome.
So while we're waiting for him, it has been interesting reading his comments and David Wiley's comments about MOOCs.
I don't read a lot. what's the discussion?
I can hear you guys fine. I had two mute buttons on just in case things got out of control here. I know I can go off at the blah, blah, blah a little bit. So I can't currently hear you guys, which is interesting. Not necessarily an impediment because, once I start to talk, it's not like I listen anyway. So I'll see if I can't come up with a bit of a solution for this here in just a sec. It's got to be just something silly that I've done. I'll let you guys go on and I'll slink back into technical setup land here.
Okay, well, he's troubleshooting. Can you fill us in on the frame the discussion that's going on?
So I think David Wiley talked about how MOOCs, first of all, he doesn't like the word MOOC, and he's not sure this is a good learning environment because it's only for experienced learners that really works. But he went on to say it's a way of learning. And then I think some people took him out of context, although Dave supported David Wiley. And then let's see, who else chimed in there? Oh, George Siemens added his 2 cents. I think everybody agrees that this kind of learning is different. I think David Wiley's point was that for undergraduate or high school students, this kind of learning is real challenging, and that you can't just expect everybody to be able to move into this and do well with it. So that's my capsule summary.
Unmute, Dave.
I'll unmute myself when I'm talking, and that way you won't hear the massive onrush of all the things going on here in my office.
Well, we want to hear you talk. We were just getting filled in by Rob on the situation with David Wiley's criticisms or comments about MOOCing. How do you feel about the name? I remember I was just creating a page for CCK 08 and 09 and linking to some EdTech Talk discussions when we didn't even have to call it a mega course or something like that.
Yeah, that conversation, I remember when Stephen and George and I were talking about that. And, it was something we made up on the spot. It may have also been drawn. There's some people who say that it came from Brian Alexander, and we may have taken it from there. I don't remember. But it wasn't something we spent a lot of time thinking about. It just, we were doing a whole bunch of stuff, and we're like, I got to call this something. Let's call it this. So, I mean, like anything else, I'm hoping that the abbreviation becomes the standard usage, and like RSS, we kind of forget what it is. And, you know, and actually it is kind of like RSS right now, because it's, some people call it massively open online courses, and some of the people call them massive open online courses, and I kind of like the ambiguity. And I hope that ambiguity continues and people come up with other variants on that so that we can end up not worrying too much on exactly what it is and let it kind of float in the way that it needs to. So, you know, Stephen and George and I did a podcast yesterday talking about the sort of the response that people have had to it. I think for me, coming out of that discussion, the biggest critique I have for those critiques is they're talking about this concept like it's been born fully made, like it's something we completely understand, like it's something we spent 10 years working through, rather than something that just happened in the summer of 2008 to us, and we kind of went, oh, I don't know how to deal with this. And, you know, it seemed like a really interesting way of being able to scale learning, a really interesting way of being able to distribute the idea of knowledge, distribute people's concepts and stuff. Of course, it's not going to work for everything. And I think pretty much everybody involved in the process at every level has admitted that it's not going to work for everybody in every kind of way. I guess I don't understand where the criticisms are coming from, unless they're directed at articles written in the Chronicle by Mark Perry. You know what I mean? Like, he's the only person who said anything specific about their broad acceptance. So, I don't know.
Well, he's trying to find the conflict, right?
Well, there's that. Yeah, it's unfortunate to have people who, I mean, this is something I wrote in a blog post about 1 o'clock in the morning last night. The people who have put the critiques in the last week or so have changed the meaning of MOOC again and made it something I think that we certainly never thought of it as, but in responding to the media as if what they're saying is what the proponents of it are saying, they've kind of made it what we're saying. So all of a sudden I'm defending myself against stuff I've never actually said, which is kind of weird. I mean, that's to some degree, I guess, maybe the role of media in our society. It's just unfortunate that people have picked it up that way.
John, which podcast was that?
I'm sorry.
Dave, you said you put a podcast together. Where is that posted somewhere?
I just tossed it into the chat room below the user.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's and you could skip through the first 13 minutes of it. Stephen doesn't Stephen doesn't crop any of the audio he posts. So there's I don't know, 6 minutes of music, and there's Steve saying, I don't really know what we're going to talk about, but that's going to happen later. And it kind of rambles on for a while. But anyway, it's the three of us just sort of jamming out first on the response to the stuff that's been going on, and then sort of our plans for the fall and how we're going to do the change MOOC in the fall differently from the ones that we've done before.
And there were a couple points I thought that were kind of interesting from that conversation that I'd like to ask John about as far as how that's being thought about in EduMOOC. The whole archiving component. And you know, I'm for my little EduMOOC site here, I've started to try to create archives of past MOOCs. And my audio a little wonky for everybody. So how to archive all the stuff that gets tossed out. Dave, you were also talking about kind of making audio a little bit more friendly and trying to do something between DS-106, but also making it easy for people to just make audio comments, which I've always been a big fan of. Any thoughts, John, on how that's going to happen in EduMOOC? Both, has there been any intentional thinking about how to archive stuff and to create audio or video conversations as well?
I don't know. I could use a gap space here to sort of tell you what's on my wish list. Technorati used to be a really nice tool for aggregating blog posts. We used it in the Writing Matrix project, but it doesn't really work that way anymore, and I don't think there's anything that has replaced it. Or if you can think of anything, I'd sure like to know about it. You know, talking about aggregation, what we used to do was we used to get students to write in a classroom somewhere, and then they would use the tag. They would use the tag Writing Matrix, and then people all over the world could find them because Technorati used to allow us to search blogs that had no credibility for a tag like Writing Matrix. So if you're looking for a tag like EduMook and you want to find it, who's blog posts EduMook, and search just on the tags, is there a tool that will do that now? Technorati doesn't really do it very well.
I use Google Blog Search.
But that's not going to give you the tags, right? That's going to give you, that's going to search on the text in the blogs. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are. Because, I mean, that's the other thing, is that depends on people tagging their stuff properly.
Well, like, you might have a tag, let's say, Plank 10 or something like that, and you might not actually mention that in your blog post, but you might think it's appropriate to Plank 10, so you would put that in a tag. You know what I mean? It could be that maybe you use the word EduMook in your blog post, but maybe not. But if you tag it, then, or you might want to tag it something else. You know, I might want to call its attention to my, something I write about EduMook, or call its attention to my multiliteracies course, so I'd tag it something that would do that, you know? But that's a tool that Technorati used to do, but it doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah, Technorati really has fallen by the wayside. John, I don't know if you were on the call or if you heard.
I am now, yep.
Yeah. Any EduMook thoughts on how stuff gets archived and things like that?
You know, the variety of content that is being generated and collected, I think really suggests that you're going to have to adopt a variety of strategies. You're not going to find one solution where, you know, sort of everything is going to fit in that one bucket, which is why I'm really interested in the prospect of having a collaborative authoring effort that would develop a kind of a pathway through the materials. Using things like this Poplet tool, we can draw out the maps of where the sort of major themes and ideas are. And then using a tool like the Wiki-to-Speech tool, we could all work together to draft up and test a learning sequence, so that there can be these verbal interactions around the key topics that would take somebody who actually is, you know, coming at all of this new and needing to sort of have their hand held and have things shown to them, explained to them, but have it be done in a way that it's not each of us individually making a podcast here or a screencast there. That it would be something that we could work on in a collaborative way. And I think that ultimately means it's a text-based tool, like a wiki, and that then there's a process by which the computer itself will manipulate the contents of that wiki to turn it into something more interactive. Have you seen the Quickie, Q-W-I-K-I, offering?
I have not.
We saw it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it just doesn't go very deep. And if we could do something that had anything like the sort of flavor of a quickie, as I understand that the quickie technology, what they do is you put in a search term just as you would for Wikipedia, and it pretty much just goes to Wikipedia and pulls out sort of the highlights of the article along with some of the images, and then does an image manipulation sort of like Animoto. You know, so you get a sort of a flashy kind of, you know, slide presentation with nice transitions to it, while the text of the encyclopedia article is played through text-to-speech. So you get this multimedia presentation about the thing that you've just asked about. But, of course, it's just a kind of a one-shot deal, and it only goes for, you know, maybe a minute. But it is a very different experience, obviously, than reading the encyclopedia article yourself, because it's sort of like watching television. Now, I think there's really a very important capability that we can develop here that involves interactivity. So it's not a sort of a passively consumed presentation, but something that actually prompts the learner to gauge their level of expertise, their their concerns, maybe give them a little bit of a challenge question. It's a very different model when the computer itself is taking the initiative, and I don't think we really know how to do that very well yet. But I think it's something we need to just experiment around with and figure out what works.
I just want to remind people, I see a bunch of people in the chat room and a few on the Ustream. If anyone wants to chime in, feel free to Skype World Bridges. There's also a U.S.-based phone number that you can call in if you scroll up on that page. And the floor is open. Anybody want to talk about anything in particular?
I still want to know, Dave, how you make those great videos with all of the handwriting on them. Is that a special software that you use, or it's just you've got a graphical flair to make them look so good?
I can't tell you. It's a trade secret. There's actually a blog post that was written that describes the full details of how exactly that was done.
Okay, great.
There's a colleague of mine at the university who helped me out with them, who actually did all the drawings and stuff. So it's the drawings, but it's not, I mean, he just drew them on a tablet. Yep. And uploaded them into the system, and it's done in Final Cut. And there's an extension for Final Cut, actually Final Cut Pro. It's an extension for it that allows you to do this. But there are a variety of ways you can actually get that in there. He does have a nice flair with the graphics, I find. And they're simple, but he does a really nice job in making them work out. He's actually just in the other room. I'm going to put on my mute button for a second here and get a shout out to him and get him to send me the link to that blog post, and I'll get it out to you guys. Just a sec.
Awesome. My concern, of course, is when you start talking about really video editing technology, you're getting way beyond sort of the capacities of your typical classroom teacher.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And normally I wouldn't do that. It just in this case we happen to have some federal funding, and to go out and try to do it. And I wanted to take a real run at. Just trying to, because I've done tons and tons and tons of the other kind of video that's really easy for people to do, and I figured I just wanted to take one shot at doing it with some professional help and that stuff. So I've just found it here. I'm going to post it into the chat room. There it is. There's the link.
And
so yeah, that
roughly,
was.
What would you say the time to create versus the time for playback ratio is? This is the metric that I've begun to look at closely in terms of authoring content. You know, can you get, you know, 1 minute after 20 minutes of work, or does it take, you know, 200 minutes of work?
Well, and it depends on how disposable that content is too, right? And that's the other thing that I always try to measure doing that stuff is, when is this going to be essentially useless? So I did 3 or 4 drafts of that particular video, which is just me blabbing and throwing text on the screen and walking through them. If you look through my blog or my YouTube account, you'll see the ones that came before that, which was just me kind of riffing on what I thought this was going to work out. But I mean, that was part of a 4-month Shirk project, the Social Sciences Council here in Canada. So we did the research, we sat around, you know, George Siemens flew up here, and we jammed ideas around, and we worked really, really hard on those. So there's also a 65-page report, which is very tedious, and you're more than welcome to try to read. it's actually really well written, but it wasn't written by me. But those were like, sit down, write the drafts out, get them edited, and the audio on those were, they're all one-take audios, but I figure Neil probably spent 4 or 5 or 6 hours on each one of them. That's in there. You can see he has a really nicely detailed example of how that worked out. It's just a question of how far you think you need to go. In this case, you know, we had the time and we had the money to be able to devote to it. And we've done other stuff where, you know, we put the time in and you don't get the return, and other times where you do something real simple. I mean, that's always been our method at EdTech Talk. You know, the work I've done with Jeff for years has been, you know, the quality and the feel of it is way more important. The quality of the discussion is more important than, you know, the way that it gets displayed, or whether, you know, it's been fancied up with, you know, the crafty intro music or whatever.
Well, it's still very impressive. So I guess that's sort of you get what you pay for.
I think you do. And like I say, we when we had, if you're looking for the starting point for, you know, with the change with EduMOOC, the one that's going now, you know, you've got 2,500 people there. If you're going to send them to one thing, probably not a terrible idea to put a lot of effort into that one thing they're going to look at. And that was the thinking behind putting the, really, the grant in was as much to get these videos made as anything. Was, you know, if we're going to send this out to 2,000 people at the start of a course, you really want to make sure that that kind of hits the targets that you're looking for. Because, and I think, well, you know, the some of those where there's some things I may do slightly different looking back at it, but I think they have been useful so far. And certainly some people seem to like them, so maybe a worthwhile effort put in then.
Well, how would you compare, though, the Khan Academy videos?
They're very good. You know, like I say, I've done stuff where I've just turned on the video and talked through stuff that's had really, really good responses to stuff. And because, I mean, to me, the obvious comparison is to the stuff that Leo Laporte did. And obviously, the style there is informed by the Leo Laporte videos. And when you're dealing with a complex concept, and you need to hand it out to somebody who you're not going to be able to cross-examine or who can't ask you any questions, I think you need to put a lot more time into trying to make the concept as simple. I mean, I can't. David Wiley clearly does not understand what we mean by MOOCs. David Wiley may be the smartest person I've ever met. And if he doesn't quite get what we're after, then, I mean... and I think with the Khan Academy stuff, they're speaking more specifically about... you know, what I would call point knowledge. It's more fact-based, and it's a lot simpler sort of point-added concepts in a lot of cases, which are a lot easier to describe. So they don't really need the complexity of delivery.
How much do you think there's a unified answer to what we want? Is it, when we talk about MOOCs, is there a clear we, or it's a concept that different people take and go in different directions?
Definitely the latter, and that's... those videos all start with something where I say something like the way that I look at them, meaning that, you know, I'm sure that there are other conceptions of it. I hope that people will take them in entirely different directions that will sort of change the way that we look at them. And, you know, with EduMOOC is a great example. There's a lot of stuff that's being done in this one where I look at it and go, oh, wow, I never thought of doing it that way. It's the same with the stuff that... DS-106 was the same way, you know, the way that they brought the way that they put together the assignments, for instance, in DS-106 are really good. I think they did a nice job at, we're actually stealing that particular case where they had a set assignment and then they had a way for people to be able to create new assignments. So they made the actual assignment for a week clear, distinct, and directed. And then said, but you don't have to do that. You can kind of make up this other thing over here. And I think having that, the broad sort of impact on this concept, whatever it is. Because, I mean, and this, Jeff, you've heard me babble about this for years. For me, the MOOC is an attempt to take something like EdTech Talk, which has worked, but to be able to direct it and use it in a more sort of focused way. So I can't tell EdTech Talk what to do. You know, certainly the shows or even with, you know, I can't even keep myself focused from week to week or in the midst of a discussion. But to be able to say, we're going to do that kind of everybody can be involved in it thing for 10 weeks and we're going to talk about widgets, you know. So the more different impacts on it, I think the better it's going to end up being.
Speaking of getting everyone involved, I just want to check in with Rob and Vance, see if you guys had anything to chime in with.
Well, I was curious about Dave's comment about David Wiley not getting MOOCs, because from the writings you guys have gone back and forth with, it, I don't know that he doesn't get it from his writing, but maybe there's another conversation you've had that can enlighten us better to understand why he doesn't understand.
let's Skype him in right now.
Is he here?
See if we can find him. You got him on your Skype, Dave?
Wiley?
Yeah.
Let me see. I have him on Google Talk, but I don't know if I have him here.
Everybody, I think tweet Dave Wiley right now.
Yeah, that's right. It's as much, I certainly don't mean to imply that he doesn't understand how the internet works and how this is meant to play off it, but the because he does. But he clearly, the MOOC has never been presented as a way of transmitting really simple conceptions of knowledge, which is the critique that, you know, I spent 3 hours replying to last night on my blog, where he says, what, you know, the problem is that the people who are talking about this seem to refuse to accept that 99% of what we do in the world is about simple knowledge transmission, right? You take this one idea and you give it to someone else. The MOOC has never been intended to present that kind of knowledge. It'd be a ridiculous, inefficient way of doing that. So the criticism seems to me to miss the point entirely. You know, if you look at connectivism, the first course that Stephen and George did, and I got a chance to go along on the ride for, they more than, well, first of all, the two of them don't agree on what connectivism is, which was the big fun of going along with that. So right off the bat, the two people who are known for the concept can't agree on it. So clearly there's no simple knowledge transmission going on here. And what they were doing was researching and conceiving of that out in the open so that people could engage with it. And that's all of the stuff we've done, the futures of education stuff, the Planck stuff, all of those things that I've been involved in have all been about exploring concepts that everybody agrees from the beginning that we don't understand or that we don't agree on or that there are multiple points of view and that, you know, it's accepted from the beginning that each individual who participates is going to come out with a different conception of it for themselves. They're going to repurpose it for themselves in different ways. That's the whole concept. And he's replying to it as if that's not what we're doing at all. So that's where I say I think he's missing the point, which is, to me, if you have a specific question about knowledge transmission, if you want to know the date of the Boston Massacre, Wikipedia can just tell you that. You don't need a course pulled together for that kind of thing. It's just a fact. It's just information. If you just need that kind of knowledge transmission, just go out and get it. There's no sense putting together 2,000 people in, you know, 10 weeks just to do that. So that's where I say I think he's off the mark a little.
Well, Wikipedia does have 400 million users every month, and they access 15 billion encyclopedia articles. So I think he actually has a point that, you know, that reference use of knowledge is huge.
Oh, yeah, and it's great, and it's already there, but not at all what we're talking about.
Right. So how do we then build a collaborative authoring of the more instructional kind of content? That's really my PhD research project, and if you've got the answer, then let's go.
I don't, but I am trying something this fall. We're trying to, here at the university, we're trying to do a MOOC, quote-unquote, for basic skills for university. Target market is first-time entrants.
Yep.
Whether they're 18 or adult learners. And we're gonna take a run at trying to do it that way. Again, I think the really critical skills that people are looking to acquire when they start are going to be different for individuals, but we're talking about a much simpler, much more down-to-earth, much more pragmatic course, right?
Right. I just posted a link to this Disrupting College piece by the Clayton Christensen. Have you looked at that? I'll tell you why I found it very interesting as I was going through it is he's teased apart the whole sort of business model and value proposition of the university as we know it into three actual categories. There's the solution provider aspect of it, that, you know, you come to the research institution to you know, get very difficult, unstructured problems dealt with in a systematic way. There's the value add process, where essentially you're taking in kind of this raw material of, you know, students and mixing it up with, you know, all of the assets of your library and your teaching facilities and baking it and incubating it and milling it and ultimately, you know, creating graduates at the end. So you're having this value add, sort of like a restaurant or a steel mill. Or maybe you're also, as a third function, a facilitated social network where you're just bringing a bunch of people together and getting them all to talk to one another, and there's value in that because, you know, people you got very young people that are kind of learning how to be adults, and they're, you know, meeting their future spouses and things like that. And what Christensen ultimately says in the piece is, well, that's why universities have such huge overhead, is they're trying to manage all of these needs simultaneously. And when you see a for-profit teaching organization like University of Phoenix coming in laser-focused on just, for example, the value-add portion, or if you see Facebook coming and taking over the entire facilitated social networking aspect, the university is going to have to rethink its business model.
Oh, do we lose Vance? There's a problem with this call. Hold while
I broke him with my interruption. That's what I get for cutting people off.
Did you break the internet again, Dave?
Apparently I did. Apparently I did. I don't think there's any... I'm the manager of web communications and innovations at the University of Prince Edward Island. This is Dave Cormier again, and part of my day job is putting together the university's public web information. So we're right now rebuilding the entire structure of how the university communicates to the world. Talking about the different audiences that are served by a university, there's actually a few more than that. That's an academic perspective of what a university is offering. The university is also a service provider. It's also, it engages with alumni in ways that there's all kinds of other things. It's an incredibly diversified organization, which makes it incredibly difficult to talk about, right? And this is something we struggle with on a daily basis. And I think if the university going forward is to have that point of survival, sure, it's a point at which it's the easy path, right? If anybody can go out and learn English literature if they're willing to put the time in, no matter how, if they have access to the information, that's becoming more and more likely that you're going to have access, right? To me, the big value add going forward, other than big science, which you can do at a university, right? Because you can afford to have a laser, and you can afford to have a nuclear accelerator, and you can afford to have those things at big universities, which is a value add in and of itself, which you're not going to get from a University of Phoenix. The other one is the professionalism, right? And if it's not about that, if it's not about the fact that there are professional researchers in whatever field who are here for you to engage with, I don't think it's going to be about anything, right? That, to me, that's the only value add that's consistent. The social networking, all the rest of that stuff, the world's diversifying so quickly right now that those are kind of filling in all over the place. You know, if you look at, I always think of the rise of mummy blogging and how that's changed the way it was for my partner to be home, both on bed rest and with our kids when they were really young, and how that social network has created all kinds of crazy offshoots, commercial offshoots, and sort of togetherness that wasn't possible even 5 years ago. I mean, you take that five more years into the future, and I think the landscape of the way that people find those kinds of, you know, their future husbands or all the rest of that stuff is really going to change. Whereas that access to the high end of professionalism, I don't think that there are a lot of other places where you can pay to allow someone to bring you into their research, to allow someone to see what it's like to be, a historian or a vet, you know. And I think that value add is going to have to come right to the front. And if it means there's a lot of two-and-two stuff going on where people are doing the University of Phoenix for 2 years to get the basic stuff and then coming into, you know, smaller, more streamlined institutions, and again, we're looking 10, 15 years out here, maybe that's what it is, but I don't know what else it has to offer. You know, I find that a really... It's certainly working in a communications team for a university, that's a really big concern.
Rob, did you want to ask your question?
Well, I was curious. So you're setting up a MOOC for your college students. I wonder if you've had any experience working with college professors in the MOOC arena, aside from obviously the ones who developed the MOOC.
Well, I work with them on a daily basis here for a lot of projects. So I have some of that, and we're running, I'm also the chair of the e-learning committee on campus, so part of the reasoning for it is to try to bring people in and show them some of the possibilities. So we're running a training course alongside of it. And it's not necessarily for our students, but for any students. So we're also it's being funded centrally by out of the VP Academics office. So it's a free offering from the university to anybody who wants to participate in the process. I don't mind being transparent, partially obviously because it's good from a communication standpoint to be seen as doing this sort of thing. I also think of it as a responsibility of the university to do this kind of thing. You know, part of those videos that I just sent a link to, those are going to be they're in the public domain. People can do whatever they want with them. Hopefully they use them. I would love for our videos to get used and for the university's name to get out there for those reasons. But if that doesn't happen, they're still going to be really useful inside of our own first year sort of prep courses that we do here anyway. So the project's designed partially as a communications avenue. It gives us a chance to talk about the good things that we do at the university and the way that we see students, which is good. It gives us a chance to maybe communicate with some students we wouldn't otherwise talk to. But more than anything else, I think it represents another one of those value adds that the university as an institution can provide to society. I mean, it's a model of that. I don't know if it's going to work the way it's structured now. It's a research project more than anything else. So it's a fairly be interesting. I'll see how it works out.
I just want to put the shout out again one more time. Anyone who wants to join the conversation, it doesn't have to be deep MOOC thinking. It can be, hey, I came across this cool resource this week. Or if there's any clustering you would like to do, feel free to cluster on air. You can Skype World Bridges, phone in. Rob, you had mentioned before about someone expressing doubts about this kind of MOOC stuff working with younger ages, with high school kids or college kids or young adults. Do you think that's the case? I don't know. I kind of see this multitasking, scattered world suiting their style.
So I think that was part of one of Wiley's comments was that, or somebody, one of you guys talked about how you had to be more educated to be able to make sense out of a MOOC. I forget who said that. And my experience with online high school students is that they'd have a hard time with this if somebody wasn't structuring or pointing them to certain places. Now, of course, you could argue kids are learning all the time and they should be able to do this. But in my experience with structured learning with high school students online, you got to point them where they're going. So that's why it'll be interesting to see with Dave's MOOC with college students how that works, because especially if students coming into college, there's such a wide array of information coming into them. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what works for them or doesn't.
But, I just want to welcome unknown phone number to the conversation. Hello.
Hi. Is this working?
Yes. Who is this?
My name is Osvaldo Rodriguez from Argentina.
Welcome.
I want to put a question to Dave, and it has to do with the following. As I've been reading and following several MOOCs, I find the word massive that really has to do with sufficient people that must be engaged so as to self-organize or self-direct their learning. So there's one question if one can downscale one of the MOOCs, and then if you don't have the sufficient people, that would be impossible. So that's the first question. And the second has to do with, I always hear about MOOCs and experiences of self-organizing in the realm of universities. And in the private sector, especially in the learning, for example, in the learning of English as a second language, there is a company which started in Berlin with a few guys who gave a free first, and then they had to put some kind of cost, very little. It's called Babel. And there, people, what they do is they all hook together, and the students, in some kind of directed, because of course the company gives some hints, but these people get together and learn English between themselves. So they self-organize, and I would call that a MOOC. What do you think, Dave?
Okay, two comments there. The first about whether or not the scale matters. I think it absolutely does. I've taught I've tried to teach along the same lines in my face-to-face courses, where I start with an empty curriculum and I try to build together. And there's a variety of different people doing that kind of thing, obviously. I think it has to be done differently when you have a small group of people. You don't have the same chance for random sort of clustering to happen. If there's not the same massive amount of people, you're not going to get as much content generated. If you have, particularly the way the MOOCs go, where people have, there's no sort of social way in which they're committed to the process. So they're not paying money, or they're not, going to be called out and embarrassed if they don't continue along. That, I don't think that with a smaller number of people, that's going to work out. Somebody forced me to give a number once. I think I said 100. Maybe it's more, maybe it's less. Who knows? But I think that one way or the other, I think the scale really makes a difference. In terms of whether or not a self-organizing pattern of people a MOOC makes, I don't know. I think for me right now, and I mean, if you ask me 6 months from now, I may give you a different answer, because I don't claim, and nor does anybody I know claim to understand exactly what exactly we're doing. To me, what a MOOC is right now is the ability to pre-describe how a group of people are going to, a network of people, pardon me, pre-describe how a network of people are going to interact over a set period of time. What you described to me about the self-organization sounds much more like a community to me. And community learning is, to me, a whole other ballpark. It's harder to control. It's more authentic. It's probably better. But the problem with community learning is it's really tough to say, we're going to start a community next September. Earlier on, in 2007, 2008, a lot of my writing was about how to try to create these communities for learning, until I realized that the expression creating community is almost oxymoronic. Not quite. It is possible. People have done it. But with EdTech Talk, when we started that community, which I really think is a community, it's not something that Jeff and I ever intended. It's not something we did on purpose. It's something that kind of happened to us, much like the description of the self-organizing learning community that you talked about around English language learning. To me, that sounds like community, and less about where a MOOC is kind of a hybrid between a conference and a traditional course and that kind of networky community learning stuff.
Okay.
Did that make sense at all?
Yes.
I intended EdTech Talk. Yes. I thought it would happen exactly as it did.
Yeah.
Dave, and I believe you have to go. Did you have any parting words?
No, I just wanted to hear the response that somebody has tried to make about three times, and then I'll head out.
Well, I would like to say that I think, throwing a MOOC is kind of like throwing a party. It works better if you invite 1,000 people in some ways, but you can also invite 10 people and have a nice party. And so I think I'm finding that the things I'm learning from the MOOC are transferring into my smaller classes. I mean, of course, they're not the same. They don't scale as far as having the possibilities for interaction or just sustaining themselves or developing networks that that seem to carry on their own. But at least I think some of the precepts, at least the ones that I pick and choose from the mix, those seem to work well on a small scale. But then that's why I call it minuscule open online course. Maybe it's different from a massive open online course. But the same principles can be applied, and they work well.
And I'm sorry, is it Rodrigo, our friend in Argentina? Did you have any follow-up questions or thoughts?
No, I think this was fine. That's my first interaction. Did you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on.
I did tweet Dave Wiley, but he has not gotten back to us. So tune in next week for Dave versus Dave.
Oh, no.
Hey, Jeff, thanks. Great job putting this on.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for playing with me so I didn't have to, you know, play one as the loneliest number again. And,
all right.
You know, I'd love to keep this conversation going. I'd love to, you know, tune into different parts of the MOOC. We don't have to talk about MOOCs all the time. We can actually, like, talk about what the MOOC is talking
the
about.
The content?
Yes, the content. and if anyone kind of has, if any of the clusters would like to play with this kind of thing, I'd be delighted to join your cluster. Speaking of which, who was it that asked about the webcasting stuff? I'd be delighted to cluster with you and maybe do some webcast-oriented stuff. Any closing thoughts or comments from anyone?
Well, let's do this again next week.
Sounds good. I'm in.
Is that your plan, Jeff, to keep doing this every week until the MOOC's over?
Pretty much, unless it crashes and burns.
Okay.
And I'm okay, not especially fixed to the schedule. You know, I'm in a different time zone than those North Americans, but, you know, we have a global contingent tonight, which was actually something I might be interested in talking about in future discussions, is have there been non-North American-based MOOCs? And cultural or global components of MOOCing.
Mm, that's a great question.
So anyway, yes, I'd love to try to do this. Like, I'm sorry?
I participated in a MOOC which was called Mobi MOOC, and it was organized by Inge de Waard from Basically. It was her doing, and she was based in Belgium. It became worldwide, and so perhaps that's a good example. It was very successful, actually.
I've seen people mention Mobi MOOC. Well, that's good. I hate these things to be too North American centric, especially when you're on the other side of time.
We had something like 556 people registered, and I've seen all of the MOOCs that I had looked and in some I participated. One of the interesting things is to learn or try to understand this business of attrition. I don't understand the word very well, but it's students' reduction once you go through the course. And then what happens with these lurkers? So we had in the Mobi MOOC, we had 556 registered, and at the very end, it was only 40 people that would answer a survey. And so it's always this question of where are the lurkers? Are they still participating? Because they did not make the survey, but are they still there? And Rita Kopp mentions in a Plink paper something related to all this, and she calls it the invisible people, invisible learning people, and actually they have even a survey on that. So this is a very interesting point to study and discuss. It's because a lot of people, in the case, for example, of let me see if I remember well, in the case of CCK08, only 83 people did the final survey of 2,300 people. So that means that's only 3% of who started or who decided to go there actually contributed at the very end to say how this course went. So for me, this is a very interesting thing to study and to keep on looking like everybody's doing. And now this research group that has been created by Dave and the other collaborators, I think it's going to do something in that direction.
Yeah, I've been a little bit surprised how little EduMOOC content there is, and not that so little, but considering there's 2,400 people, you know, I'm trying to aggregate all the blog posts. There aren't that many. You know, you can count them on two hands most days.
Maybe people are starting to
the actual
understand
spreadsheet
how to
only has 200+ people, so yeah, we're a smaller group than I think is advertised.
Mm.
Yeah, I think people are kind of starting to understand how to deal with a MOOC. You don't really, you know, the first one is kind of stressful because you're thinking, gosh, I'm missing so much. But as you've done two or three of them, you know, you kind of understand, well, you know, this is going to be fun. You know, let's just go into it and do what I can, you know. So I think I sort of see a lot of my own thoughts about MOOCs being echoed in what the other people are saying. So I think there's sort of a zeitgeist on MOOCs that's forming.
Vance, while you have the floor, would you like to plug Learning Together?
Well, yeah, I put the link in the chat. It's just something we do every Sunday at 1300 GMT. I think that, I can't remember, is that noon London time?
It's noon UTC.
No, it's 1300 UTC.
GM. Oh, it's 1300 UTC. Yeah. Okay.
But GMT is UTC, isn't it?
Not, those are the same. Not right now.
Oh, is UTC London time? No, what's the difference?
My understanding is GMT moves an hour with daylight savings. UTC stays the same.
No, GMT stays the same.
Okay, I would trust you. There's very few people I defer to when it comes to time zones, Vance, but you're definitely one of them.
I thought they were the same. I could be wrong. I mean, nobody knows time zones, you know. The Seinfeld thing, you know. Could have a Seinfeld on that.
So I'm sorry, but, is this the original Webheads gathering that's called Learning Together now, or?
Well, it's a permutation. Basically, Learning Together, well, we've always met at noon GMT. We still do that. We meet at Tapped In, tapped.org. tappedin.org. But anyway, we meet there at noon GMT. But it was kind of slowing down, so I sort of decided to jazz it up a little bit. So I decided to have a presentation, and now that I've put the podcast together, we got quite a lot of content, you know, just over 1 year, and I suppose we'll go for a couple of years more. But anyway, basically, it happens every Sunday at 1300 GMT, and we meet, we have now a wiki, which I'm using to organize getting people to present, and this week we're going to talk about the MOOC, because that seems to be what people are doing. And so we'd like to let people know that if they want to join us, please do that. We'll be in Illuminate. If you just go to the link in the text chat, then you'll find a place to be. So we use Illuminate. I could put that link in there too. But anyway, and I also advertise on Facebook and the places that, you know, I'll make sure that there's something in the MOOC that will further give you the links. But that's the one, learningtogether.pbworks.
All right, well, we'll definitely tune in. Anything else anyone wants to plug or mention? All right, I'll take that as a no. And thank everyone who participated and tuned in to this inaugural MOOC cast. I will toss this up on the little MOOC space I have, and people are welcome to republish it wherever they like. And we'll tentatively plan on doing it next week, same time. And if the interest or something else pops up in the meantime, I'm always glad to click the stream button. So thanks, everybody. Have a great EduMOOC week.
Good night, Al.
Good night.
Bye.